It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. Cybersecurity experts recently found that Wisconsin and nine other states had sensitive election systems connected to the internet. Vice News reports that could have left votes vulnerable to hackers. Investigations into the 2016 presidential campaign revealed meddling with the U.S. voting systems. And just last month, former special counsel Robert Mueller warned that the threat of Russian interference remains.
Oh, it wasn't a single attempt. They're doing it as we sit here. And they expect to do it during the next campaign.
What questions do you have about Wisconsin's election systems? What do you think should be done to stop hackers ahead of 2020? Should our state be spending more tax dollars on modern systems or auditing after a vote? Call 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Megan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us again. You visited Las Vegas over the weekend for DEF CON. That's a huge conference for computer hackers. What were some of your takeaways as far as election security?
So one of the takeaways, and this has been something that has really been resonating with me throughout the last year, is that there are so many people that are interested in elections and willing to help with the cause in terms of securing elections. And so it was really a good opportunity to network with other people from around the country who are very interested in the subject matter and to see what other resources and opportunities to network might be available out there.
You know, sometimes we think of hackers with this negative connotation. You're saying, no, they're trying to help us see potential weaknesses in our system.
Absolutely. I think in every sector, you see people that really care about democracy and about their states, and they want to be involved in the cause and involved in the solution. And I thought that that was something that was very apparent there. There were a lot of very engaged people.
What did you learn about Wisconsin's system from these hackers?
Well, we didn't learn anything specific about Wisconsin, other than there's always more opportunities to continue to get information from other places, other sources. And I think that a larger pool of information is always very useful as you try to secure a system. And so the more people that we have feeding us that information to make our system secure, I think the better off that we all are.
Time moves quickly. Looking ahead to next year's elections, what's the Wisconsin Elections Commission doing to improve safeguards against hackers?
So the Wisconsin Elections Commission has taken many measures over the last few years to secure our systems. The state of Wisconsin is the most decentralized election system in the country. So we have 1,850 local jurisdictions who are running elections. And so our job is really to make sure that they have the tools and resources to operate in a secure way. So in terms of securing our statewide voter registration system, we've taken many measures as we headed into the 2018 elections to make sure that infrastructure is very strong to support that number of users. And now our efforts are shifting a little more towards the local end in making sure that our municipal clerks have the tools and resources in their municipality in order to do their jobs securely and efficiently.
Yeah, the Elections Commission says hundreds of clerks in Wisconsin are using outdated systems like Microsoft Windows 7. So how much of a risk are these outdated systems?
Well, first of all, it should be noted that Windows 7 is not yet out of date.
Right. The updates stop in January. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Correct. Yep. And so there are some clerks that we're going to have to address once the end of life comes for that operating system. However, our system right now, we've built in a feature that allows us to analyze the technology that they're using. And we're asking today for our commission to consider a plan in which when we do that analysis, if there are municipal clerks that are not in compliance with the policy to enter our system, that we're able to help with providing them with the hardware that they need and the software management that they need in order to continue to operate in a secure way.
And what kind of an investment are we talking dollars-wise in that upgrade?
So what we're asking for the commission today is for them to approve an expenditure of up to $300,000 in order to buy what we call loaner-managed hardware devices that the municipal clerks could use if they do not have hardware that meets the baseline requirements for a system.
We're talking about election security with Megan Wolf, the administrator of Wisconsin's Elections Agency. What questions do you have about our election systems? Do you trust that our elections are secure? Call 800-642-1234. Some advocates want to see more audits of paper ballots here in Wisconsin. Here's Karen McKim from Wisconsin Election Integrity in a recent interview with CBS 58.
They can be as careful as they want to, and their one and only safeguard against hacked election results is our paper ballots and using them in hand counts during the county canvass to make sure the results are right.
Megan, should the state consider more audits of paper ballots during elections?
So the state of Wisconsin does have statutory requirements for audits to be conducted after each general election in the state of Wisconsin. So prior to each election, every piece of voting equipment in the state of Wisconsin must be tested to ensure that it's tabulating the votes correctly. Then after each general election, our commission actually voted to increase the number of audits that are done after each general to about 5% of each of the machines in the state of Wisconsin. And so that means that machines are randomly selected from across the state, and those jurisdictions have to conduct a hand recount of that reporting unit in order to verify the totals as part of their canvas reporting process.
As we mentioned off the top, Vice News reported that Wisconsin and 9 other states had some sensitive election systems connected to the internet. Tell us more about this. Did these systems expose Wisconsin to risk?
So what these systems were is there are election night results reporting systems that are housed at the counties, and the local jurisdictions will send in the unofficial results to those county systems after an election. They then have to be verified through 3 steps at the municipal, county, and state level after each election before they could become official. And what this was is some of the modems for those systems. It didn't mean that those systems were inherently vulnerable. What we liken it to is, let's say you go on vacation. Before you leave, you lock your house, you lock your windows, you turn on your alarm, your house is secure. But you might also take steps like canceling your mail so that people don't get an indicator that you're away. And in this case, some of the counties may have forgotten to cancel their mail, but it certainly doesn't mean that their systems were exposed or vulnerable.
Sure. Still not a great situation to have them connected to the internet. Are these sensitive back-end systems now offline? Is that something, have we made a change?
So we have contacted all the counties that were named in that report and to make sure that they were following best practices in terms of taking those systems offline. Some of those jurisdictions do have elections or are in testing for upcoming local elections. And so in those cases, it's perfectly appropriate for them to still be online.
Since 2016, have you seen changes in attempts to breach Wisconsin's election systems? Are there new threats? What are you preparing for?
Every day, and this is even before 2016, there are thousands, if not sometimes millions, of people trying to get into state networks. And that's just a normal part of state business. And so we continue to see people knocking on the door trying to get in, but we also continue to see that Wisconsin has an extremely robust infrastructure when it comes to cybersecurity, and that there has never been a successful breach or even attempt to breach beyond the firewalls or anything to get into the statewide system of Wisconsin.
Megan, thank you so much for this update.
Thank you.
Megan Wolf is the administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Up next, you may be excited to break in a new pair of sneakers or pick up a snazzy backpack on a back-to-school sale. But not all accessories are created equal. Some contain substances that irritate our skin. An expert on textiles and a dermatologist take your questions up next. What do you want to know? What have you experienced? Bring us into the conversation. Help us understand your world. We are at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show, and it's right here on the Ideas Network. Sandals and loafers, purses and satchels, you name it. Accessories touch our bodies every day, sometimes for hours at a time. And they're made with manufactured and natural chemicals that could irritate our skin, leading to little annoyances or big allergic reactions. It's The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. What questions do you have about what you wear? Do certain materials, leather, nickel, nylon, do they make your skin blotchy or itchy? How do you avoid investing in pieces that just make you break out? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR. We're talking about how the body reacts with Dr. Margot Reeder. She's a dermatologist at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health, and she specializes in contact dermatitis and patch testing. Dr. Reeder, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
And joining us in studio is Majid Sarmadi. He's a professor of design studies at UW-Madison School of Human Ecology, and he researches textile, fibers, dyeing, finishing, and sustainability. Majid, thank you for being here on The Morning Show.
Thank you.
Majid, let's start at the bottom. When we put our shoes on for the day, we don't always think about what we're putting on our feet. So what do we find in our shoes that can cause problems?
There are a few reasons that people get problems. One of the reasons is the material that we put in the shoes when we are shipping them, and we call them anti-molding and or anti-fungal, that when they're transferring from China, India, or other places to the United States in container over the sea, you know, they don't create mold on those things. Those sashes are known to, they're called DMF, and are known to cause lots of problem. And so one of the best way to deal with it, the minute that you get those shoes, remove them, dispose them, and then air your shoes for a couple of days minimum to wear it. So that's one of the reasons. Another reason is the material that is used to make, whether it be natural leather that has different problems because of the tanning and the chemicals that we are using. For example, natural leathers, we are using up to 250 different chemicals in the tanning process to make this hide that rots to stay without going bad. And you stays flexible, it stays nice that you can wear it. So we have found, researchers have found, not me, that gloves and leather articles from Titanic after 75 years still are in a good condition. So they are loaded with chemicals, even natural leather. So it depends how you are doing it. And one of the important point is most people think anything that is natural is better for me. But remember, peanut butter is natural. Poison ivy is natural. So we're going to know each person has different chemistry. Each person has different way of reacting with chemicals. And Dr. Margot is best to answer those questions. But we got to select the right material for the right person.
Right. I'm still getting over the fact that I can't wear those shoes right away. You want me to leave them out in the air for a couple of days. And
yes,
that's a big ask.
Yes, but we have to do it. Because majority of the people do not have any problem. Let me put it this way. Majority of the people, but there are certain group of people that show very bad reaction.
So it's better to just avoid it. Dr. Reeder, have you seen patients react to shoes, certain shoes?
Absolutely. And what can happen is patients can develop an itchy dermatitis that typically shows up on the tops of the feet and sometimes the sides of the feet. And the reactions can be from lots of different chemicals in footwear. It can be from the rubber that's used in the sole of the shoes. It can be used from glue that's used to assemble the shoes or glue the lining together. Also can be from leather in the shoes or even dyes that are used in the textiles. Yeah.
And when you say dermatitis, can you explain that to us?
Sure.
What is that reaction?
Yeah, that's an itchy rash that shows up on the skin. And most contact dermatitis shows up directly in the area with contact with the chemical that's causing the allergic reaction.
So you'll see it along the strip where that strip of your shoe sits against your skin.
Often, yes.
What about things like plastic sandals?
So there can be different chemicals that are used in plastic as opposed to shoes that are made from textiles. Or other things with plastic shoes is sometimes if the plastic shoes are cleaned out with different cleaning chemicals, those in turn can cause dermatitis or rashes.
Okay. So is there, can you just wipe them down? Is that anything that will get us ahead on that? Or is it not something that we can really solve?
Many times these chemicals are in the clothing, so they're not something that you can take a new pair of sneakers and throw them in the washer and wash them out. These chemicals are bound, and so they tend to be released often with heat, sweating, or friction. So they're not something that can be simply easily removed.
Dr. Margot Reeder is a dermatologist at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health, and Majid Sarmadi is a professor of design studies at UW-Madison's School of Human Ecology. How do you, as a consumer, try to encourage manufacturers to make garments without harmful chemicals? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Tell us, do you consider the materials when you buy accessories like shoes or bags? You can call 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Majid, if we've got shoes that are a certain color and they tend to stain things that they come in contact with, what should that tell us about what we're dealing with?
And staining is different matter because some of the shoes are treated that they don't stain, and that's another chemicals. You know, we are a very busy group of people all around the nation, everywhere. People do not have time to take care of shoes, they take care of your clothing. They don't want to iron it. They don't want it to press it, whatever you want to call it. So the easy care mentality has forced the textile chemist to use different chemicals, whether it's on the shoes or on your handbag or on your gloves. I get phone calls from people that I bought natural leather gloves, but I'm showing reaction. So I ask them to wear a white cotton gloves after you wash that white cotton gloves several times. Wear that one and then wear your leather gloves over it if you like the look, or you are athletic and you are using some of those things. So therefore, the easy care mentality has forced us to use those chemicals. And majority of the people are okay. I want to emphasize that majority of the people do not react. And sometimes people say that we bought cotton clothing, we bought other things that shows reaction. So we have got samples from clothing from the market, and those that they were marked 100% cotton or 100% silk, and we tested some of them. Some of them were mislabeled. They were not 100% cotton. They were not cotton at all. And there were some that they said they were silk, but they were not silk at all. Hmm. And therefore, sometimes in the factory, mislabeling happens. So if your reaction to it, then we have simple tests that we can help you to test them at your home.
Sure. Mary from Madison called and couldn't stay with us. She wants to know, are we supposed to walk barefoot or is there something that we can do to better protect ourselves? Or are we better off not wearing shoes? Dr. Reeder?
No, I want to emphasize also that the majority of people don't have reactions to their footwear. It's only a very select group of people who become sensitive. So by all means, we should absolutely wear shoes. I think the main thing is to be aware that these types of reactions can happen. And so if you're wearing new footwear and you're starting to have itchy rashes on the tops of your feet or uncomfortable with the footwear, being aware that you can get reactions from shoes.
Where's the line between, I just don't wear those shoes anymore, and wow, I've really got to see a doctor about this. This seems to be something that's more pervasive. How do you know?
That's a good question. I think if you are reacting to lots of different shoes and not able to find footwear that works for you, or if you've had even one episode of a very severe reaction to shoes, it's probably worthwhile seeing a dermatologist to talk about that, because sometimes these chemicals that are found in footwear can affect other products that we use. For example, if you are allergic to the rubber in the lining of your shoes, that could be a problem if you work in a job where you need to wear rubber gloves. So I think it's worthwhile investigating these reactions, particularly if they've been severe or bothersome.
Just take the time, figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Dr. Margot Reeder and Majid Sarmadi, stay with us. We are having a conversation about the health impact of our fashion, and we want to hear from you. Do certain items of clothing give you that contact dermatitis? How does your skin react? What did you do to figure out how to curb your symptoms? You know, when you're shopping, what do you look for on the tag? The tag might not be accurate, but are you looking for certain chemicals or certain fibers that make more sense because you know your body handles them better? 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Up next is news. Then we continue this conversation with your input. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. Our accessories are sprayed, dipped, and dyed to keep their color and quality intact. But those processes can come at a cost, one that makes our skin itch or causes angry red marks on our bodies. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina, in for Kate Archer-Kent. And we're working to better understand why the materials that make up our bags and belts can sometimes make us break out. What do you shop for when you are out looking for clothes? Do you look on the tag? What do you try to avoid? And how do you think about it when buying clothes for your family? What do you wonder before you invest in that back-to-school book bag? There's a line for you at 800-642-1234, or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Our guides during this discussion are UW-Madison Design Studies Professor Majid Sarmadi and UW-Madison's Dr. Margot Reeder. She's a dermatologist at the School of Medicine and Public Health. You know, Majid, we're trying our best. We are looking at the labels. We're trying to avoid things that don't work for us. That doesn't always matter, though. Tell us about the information you have that sometimes the label doesn't match the clothes. What have you seen?
Well, sometimes we get samples, or we buy shirts or other items or clothes or shoes, and we test them. And a few piece of clothing that we have purchased that we suspect that they are not the same thing as the label has said, we have taken to our lab, and we find out that our suspicion was correct. They were not 100% cotton or 100% silk. For example, silk is very easy to detect. If you want to, you know, if you get only a few fibers or a small piece of yarn and put it in freshly purchased chlorine bleach, in 5 to 10 minutes, it's totally gone.
It's
that silk.
Degraded. Hmm.
If it's swimming for you and going a few laps and does nothing for you in the container that you put the bleach in, then it's not silk. Silk dissolves in chlorine bleach very easily.
And we're not talking it wasn't 100% cotton, it was 98% cotton. You're saying the materials might be completely different, completely mislabeled.
Mm-hmm. In factory, these things could happen, you know, because there are lots of labels. I don't think that these people intentionally were selling them. But in factories, the things happen. And when you are doing lots of mass production, and sometimes the buyers are fresh from MBA schools, and they go and buy those things and make deals and really do not understand it either. Sure. So the more trained workforce that works for these companies, the better result they get.
And that's just that's something that applies, you know, beyond that. It's not that anyone is doing anything intentional, but certainly that can happen. Dr. Reeder, what about things like rubber gloves? We've talked about, you know, buying a shirt or shoes, but there are things that people have to use in their jobs that also might be susceptible to that kind of mislabeling.
Absolutely. In fact, there was a study that was done looking at rubber gloves that were marketed as being chemical-free. And what this researcher did is she tested the gloves, then looking for those chemicals, and nearly all of the gloves did contain these chemicals that they were supposed to be free of. So the same thing can happen with rubber gloves, and of course that represents a occupational problem for people that rely on using rubber gloves for safety in their jobs.
Is there an easy fix to that, or is it trial and error?
That's a difficult question. I'd say you can absolutely try to avoid it based on the labeling, but if you're having trouble, then it's time to stop and think about whether that label is correct.
Mary Kay in Kenosha is ready to join us. Mary Kay, what can you tell us about your experience with testing for companies?
Okay, natural fibers are best. I have two pair of cotton shoes with leather bottoms. They're very comfortable. They fit your feet. I have a cotton purse or hemp purse. Also, polyester. You don't have to iron it. So cotton, wool, and all the leathers are the best.
And Mary Kay, you used to be a tester for a company. You have some experience in this?
Yes, it was for chemicals. And I'm allergic to things, so I had to stop. But I found out in my lifetime, hyperallergenic stuffing that goes in pillows, all these things are good, okay? And all, like I said, natural fibers and polyester.
Thanks, Mary Kay. Dr. Reeder, Mary Kay says those natural fibers that come from the earth are better for her. Are they better for everybody?
It really depends on the person because different dyes
exactly.
or different finishes can be used in different fabric content. So although some people who might have allergies to dyes that are in synthetic clothing like polyester, they might do better with cotton. And then on the other hand, the cotton finishing products are different than what's used for synthetic fibers. So I would say that it can really depend on the individual.
Exactly. She's 100% correct on that one. And remember that lots of people are showing reaction to leather, you know, the natural product because of all chemicals that we put on them. And then when you are making those shoes, you are using glues and adhesives for different parts. And the off-gassing from that, some people show a reaction. So there is no one type of a product for every single person on earth. You got to see what your body react to and what it doesn't. And we know that many people are allergic to wool, you know, and Dr. Reeder can speak to that one, you know, and especially lanolin, the oil that it comes out of the wool is some people show reaction to it. There is no single way of protecting everyone.
We'd like it if there were an easy fix. It just sounds like there isn't.
That's right.
Right. We're talking with Design Studies Professor Majid Sarmadi and with dermatologist Dr. Margot Reed. And we're wondering if there are certain types of clothing that make you break out, what happens to your skin, what questions you have about the accessories that you buy and how they have an effect on your body. 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. You know, we just kind of circled back to shoes, Dr. Reeder, for your patients who have issues with certain shoes. What are some of the remedies? Can we buy different shoes or are there creams or can we just wear socks and hope that that'll get us through?
I think the first thing that we try to do is we try to figure out what is the culprit and what is the source of the rash. So we do something called patch testing, which is a type of skin allergy testing, which is different than prick testing. We're looking for chemical reactions. Patch testing takes place over about 5 days, and we place chemicals on the patient's back and then try to get a positive reaction to one of those chemicals to figure out the cause. With footwear, sometimes we even take a piece of the shoe. We might cut up part of the shoe and test the patient directly to that, particularly if they've had a severe reaction to a set of shoes.
So you have to say goodbye to the shoes. Do you take a panel or?
We take a very small piece. Okay. Yes.
Okay. And so then they might be able to survive it.
Sometimes, that's provided they're not allergic to it. So in some cases, though, a lot of patients will try, before they come to see me, they'll try to wear two pairs of socks or try to limit that contact with their skin. And usually with footwear, that's not as helpful. And that's because the heat from your feet can cause that leaching of the chemicals that will pass through socks. So the best thing to do is to try to identify the cause so that then we can get people into footwear that's safe for them to use.
So I'm supposed to let my feet breathe more with socks that are cotton, that are better, but that actually does not help me with the chemical barrier.
If you're allergic to this shoe, sure, then it's not going to be very helpful.
Majid.
You know, Dr. Reeder and I received a grant from NIH, a pilot grant from NIH and from School of Human Ecology. And we are extracting some of those chemicals from the material. And then we provide those chemicals to Dr. Reeder. And Dr. Reeder is doing the patch test. So we are actively trying to find the culprits by testing in our lab, providing and make chemicals in a different concentration for her that she can do patch testing, and we find out what's the problem.
And Majid, you say that there is a step before patch testing, and that's using your senses. Talk about the new shoe smell.
Yes. And I always tell my students in the class, anytime that you get new shoes and smells good or funny or something, that's a smell of future asthma or allergy. Try to air your shoes before you're wearing it. And the same thing with the cars. I always tell my students that in the hot summer day, there are lots of off-gassing from the chemicals and adhesive and plastics in the car. Always crack your window, open for a while till the car cools down. And then, close up your window.
Even when you've had the car a long time, even these chemicals persist,
matter.
They continue.
Yes. Yes. Always the off-gassing slows down. That's one thing. Another thing that I want to know, people know, when the shoes start to have problem and start to break, it means that the chemicals are coming out of it. Chemicals are being released. It's not flexible anymore and those things. So then is the time that some chemical finishes and the other chemical start to emit more. Therefore, if there is a very old shoes, probably you want to stay away from them too because they may cause a different problem.
All right. We benefit from stain-resistant coatings and sturdy fibers, but not all of those convenient materials are good for us. And we continue this conversation with Majid Sarmadi and Dr. Margot Reeder. They're all ears. What do you want to know? 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina, and this is The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We've been talking about the fact that those shoes that look great on the shelf might not be as great once you wear them for a while. If you itch or blister, it's not necessarily a bad fit. It could be that your skin flares up when it makes contact with manufacturing materials like industrial glue or finishes on metal buckles. So what do you want to know about the accessories that you own? What do you look for when you are purchasing different items? 800-642-1234. We're talking with dermatologist Dr. Margot Reeder and design studies professor Majid Sarmadi. Dr. Reeder, we've touched a little bit on the idea, the concept of natural or hypoallergenic materials that can be used. And we need to do a little bit of myth-busting here Tell us what that really means and if we can use it as a guide to purchase things that keep us healthy.
Right. So the term hypoallergenic is really misleading for patients and consumers. A lot of people will gravitate towards products that are natural or products that are listed as dermatologist recommended. But hypoallergenic is a term that actually doesn't really have any meaning behind it. There was an attempt in the 80s by the FDA to define what it means to be hypoallergenic. And this was met with a lawsuit from some cosmetic companies. And actually, at this point, there is no regulation and there's no meaning behind the term hypoallergenic. Any company can use that to describe their product. So this makes it very misleading for people. And I also tell patients that there's nothing more natural than poison ivy. I use the same term, and a lot of people often try to use these natural products, but we see reactions from plants. We see reactions from essential oils. So just because something's natural doesn't necessarily mean it's safe for your skin.
And Majid, you've talked about leather during this conversation. There's the aspect of it that people's skin may react, even though it is technically a natural material. There's also a sustainability factor here. What should we know?
Well, leather production is very water and energy consuming. It's extremely water hog and energy consuming. That's one aspect of it. Another aspect of it are the rainforests of, are being destroyed to create pasture in order that we have leather. That's another issue. Another issue is the health of the workers in Southeast Asia. Most of the leathers are produced in Bangladesh, in India, and in some part of China. But if you go to those countries and see, as I have gone and seen, you see how these things are produced, is heartbreaking. And most of these leather productions are a small mom and pop or whatever, a small operation of 10 to 20 people are working over there. And when you look, the average workers that works over there does not live more than 30 years. The chromium and other chemicals are extremely dangerous, and people are using to produce leathers. And these people are losing their lives constantly. So when it comes to sustainability, the energy use, the rainforest, the pastures, the runoff from the farms and all those things, and, big mega farms, are one issue. The human health and social justice is another issue that we have to be worried about.
Yeah, you're touching on this public health issue. And on Twitter, Luke wants to know what the environmental impact of modern fibers is in terms of recycling. Are they able to biodegrade in landfills? What happens there?
Unfortunately, the modern fibers stay longer in landfill because natural microbes haven't found a way to deal with them yet. But we have to recycle. And then I'm always advocating that we should not mix fibers together, because when you're making natural fiber mixed with other fibers, recycling them become a nightmare. Therefore, if we do that, it's easier to recycle material.
Majid Sarmadi is a professor of design studies at UW-Madison School of Human Ecology, and Dr. Margot Reeder is a dermatologist at UW-Madison School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Reeder, we have a question from Terry in DeForest, who asks, what kind of effect can the smell of these chemicals have on our bodies, and how does that impact us?
A lot of people will have sensitivity to things like fragrances or the chemical smell. Some people will complain of headaches and feeling unwell when they're in the presence of these strong chemicals. I, in particular, study the impact of the chemicals directly on the skin, which is what I usually see clinically, and that's usually an itchy, red, bumpy rash in the areas where the clothing is often tight. And that can be often along the hips or the fronts of the legs and sometimes on the sides of the arms.
We do have a caller who wants to talk about this. Rick from Milwaukee, what's your question this morning?
Yeah, I wanted to just ask about how fibers aren't necessarily, well, we talked about leather can screw up environment. We've talked about all these issues with these different materials. If you just wave a magic wand, what would the 350 million people in the U.S. be wearing?
Thanks for that, Rick. It was a little bit hard to hear, but if we could choose, you know, what should we be wearing?
If you are not allergic to cotton, wear 100% cotton, but untreated one. And iron, press it, or if it has a little bit wrinkles, who cares? So your skin is much more important if you are showing reaction to it. If you are not showing any reaction, nylon and polyester and other natural man-made fibers are okay. We do not have enough cotton to satisfy the needs of every single person in this world. Unfortunately, our closets are becoming overwhelmed with clothing, and fashion is changing every single season. And people, they don't need it, but emotionally need it.
Thank you. Pat from Osseo is also on the line. Pat, what's your question this morning?
Okay, I have a question. On the bras they make nowadays, the brassieres, they have like a fiber-type padding in all the bras you buy nowadays. When I wear them, my chest just breaks out in a terrible red, itchy rash. I went to the doctor, and all she said was, well, wear a T-shirt under your bra. Well, that doesn't make sense. But then I read something that there may be formaldehyde in them now. I don't know. I was just grabbing at anything to figure out what is going on.
Yeah, Pat, thanks for the question. Dr. Reeder, what do you think? What steps could Pat take?
There are lots of different chemicals that can be found in bras. And certainly in the different parts of the bra, there can be a polyester lining. There can be resins that are used to treat the bra. In the padding themselves, there can be a foam or almost a spongy material. So lots of different things could be culprits. Probably what I would recommend is seeing a dermatologist who specializes in contact allergy so that they could work with you to try to figure out the source, potentially doing allergy testing. But I think it's probably reasonable to first see a dermatologist and talk about the symptoms you've been having.
As opposed to just trying to switch on your own, try different things on your own. There are problems with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So many times I see patients are very resourceful, want to try to fix this problem. And so many times people will go ahead and switch products several different times before they come to see me. And the issue can be is that the chemical or ingredient that they're allergic to can be in lots of different products. So they might just be switching from one problem to another problem, thus causing the rash to last longer and more discomfort before they finally get a diagnosis.
You know, we've covered so much and there's so much more left. Dr. Reeder, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
And Majid, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Majid Sarmadi is a professor of design studies at UW-Madison's School of Human Ecology. He researches textile fibers, dyeing, finishing, and sustainability. And Dr. Margot Reeder, she's a dermatologist at UW-Madison's School of Medicine and Public Health, and she specializes in contact dermatitis and patch testing. Just ahead, we'll talk about drugs that endanger children across Wisconsin. I'm Keeley Voltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.